Welcome to a very special Canada Day and free agency edition of Canucks Talk. I'm Jamie Dodd. My co-host is Thomas Drantz. He covers the team at The Athletic as well. We're broadcasting live from the Kintec studio. Kintec Footwear and Orthotics working together with you in step. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line, and coverage of NHL Free Agency 2025 is brought to you by Homes by David L. Young of Dexter Realty. Here, there, everywhere. Visit Homes by David L. Young.com. And Drancer, it is 9 a.m., noon Eastern, which means it's not even tampering anymore. You can pick up the phone, you can call a free agent, and you can put together an extremely complicated multi-year, multi-million-dollar deal in a matter of minutes and announce it.
Well, except wait. We'll wait because there might be a new level of artifice given all the rumblings.
So we got to wait until like 9:05.
Yeah, or longer. We might see deals like doled out a little bit later in the day.
Sure, sure.
So that teams have a little bit extra deniability in case the league office comes calling and saying, hey, you're doing what all the other teams are also doing.
And not only all the other teams in the NHL, all the other teams in every professional sport that has free agency. This is how it goes. Well, this is how it works.
In the NFL, they literally have a thing called the legal tampering period.
Yep. Although I believe in the NBA, well, they tried it in the NHL as well, and the NBA. And what happened is like, okay, the legal tampering period opens today. And then in the days leading up to it, it's like, this guy's going to sign here. You know what I mean? It just shifted the illegal tampering back. It didn't stop it.
Yeah.
So they were like, wait a second. What are we doing here?
You're not wrong, but it was also, I still think, look, the closer you can get to honesty, the better off you are. I think short of just being like, we don't care. We actually don't care, and tampering rules are off and everyone recruit all the time. Short of that, I don't really know how you legislate against it.
No, it's impossible.
Especially like there's something so ingrained in hockey about the culture of like recruiting for your team, dating, like you literally see it at the, you know, the level of like children.
Yes.
All through like teenagers, high school, like this is something that every hockey player, every hockey coach, every hockey manager, every hockey agent has like grown up around and with.
Yeah, how could you not?
Yeah.
You're hanging out at the combine, people. You're talking wherever. It's like, hey, what's this guy think? Like, it would be impossible to completely shut it down. So anyways, that's our little, by the way, we do have a signing. So didn't wait that long, and you're not going to believe what the first signing is. It's very perfect for this market. Noah Juulsen is signing in Philadelphia.
Yeah!
Rick Dhaliwal.
Let's go!
The first UFA off the board. I am not joking. I am not making this up. Unless Rick Dhaliwal has been hacked here, which I don't think he has. Juulsen gets a one-year, $900,000 one-way deal to rejoin Rick Tocchet in Philadelphia. And I cannot think of a better way to open July 1st here than Rick Dhaliwal reporting Noah Juulsen going to Philadelphia. So we're away and running, and we'll see what transpires with the Canucks here. But to kind of big picture frame
good for him, though, like really quickly, you know, I know Noah Juulsen became a bit of a meme.
Yep.
Right. And fans,
the Juulsen update, also very much a meme.
Totally. Yep. And fans, you know, were like complaining about things like Juulsen in the lineup over Brännström when the Canucks couldn't move the puck, which really was more about the composition of the D itself as opposed to Noah Juulsen. Noah Juulsen traded, acquired by the Canucks as part of the Joleví trade, right? Before the 2022-23 season. You know, was obviously a first-round pick, Yale Academy. We know he's from the Fraser Valley, local product. Made himself into a regular. He played two full seasons for the Canucks, and then he wasn't on waivers. Like, he earned an NHL salary throughout that time. He overcame really significant career-threatening injuries early in his career, and during his time in Vancouver, made himself into a solid contributor on the third pair and a really competitive, legitimate stationary defensive specialist with penalty killing utility. And now he's got a one-way deal, a one full guaranteed NHL salary in Philadelphia at $900K, well above the veteran minimum. Like, just congratulations to a local product who left a lot on the ice in Vancouver for 2 years. We know he's not the perfect defenseman. We know that when he, you know, ended up on the ice against top competition in the playoffs, you could tell.
Oh yeah.
But that doesn't take away from what he accomplished in his 2 years in Vancouver. And you know, for all the guffawing, like, honestly, we should take a sec and just tip our cap to what's been a really incredible career resuscitation for a local product who played real hard for this team.
He certainly did that. And look, there's a reason Rick Tocchet loved him, right? Like, because of a lot of the characteristics that you're describing, the work ethic, the quality of teammate he is, and all of those things. And he's also a player of it, again, for as much as he became kind of a joke is maybe putting it too strongly, but it was like an inside joke kind of amongst Canucks fans. Mm-hmm. But for all of that, he's a type of player that every NHL team needs. Every NHL team has on the roster, has in their system somewhere. Now he goes to Philadelphia. And by the way, imagine if Rick Dhaliwal had gotten scooped on the Noah Juulsen. That would have been simply devastating. Something. So shout out to Dhaliwal for being the one to get it out there first. What I was going to say is, we're taking a step back, and there's already been some Canucks news today, and we'll get into that in a second, but kind of from a big picture perspective, from a big picture Canucks perspective, I think this is going to be a fascinating day. We're not expecting them to be bidding on any splashy free agents. There's not a lot of splashy free agents out there at this point. Two of the most high profile guys are from their team.
The two highest scoring from a goals perspective, unrestricted free agents on the market are departing Vancouver Canucks players.
Yeah. And so really, I think the two biggest stories, which is very atypical for an intense Canadian hockey market on July 1st, especially one that has been very open about the desire to get better. But I think the two biggest stories are the extensions that we are expecting and have now been confirmed for Thatcher Demko and Connor Garland, and where the departing players wind up. The biggest story, like far down the list after that, is going to be who they sign. Now, could there be a surprise out there? Could there be a surprise trade? Yeah, of course. I don't want to close the door on anything. But that's really what we're monitoring more than anything else. I don't think anyone's sitting here now and expecting the Canucks to find a clear-cut second-line center answer today. You know, the names we're hearing, even Jack Rozovic, who they might not be able to afford. Granlund, doesn't look like they're going to be in the sweepstakes for him. Christian Dvorak, like, these names don't even fit that mold if they were able to successfully land them. So it's very much about the internal contracts handed out to Demko and Garland, and then where do Besser and Suter end up. We should also note, of course, that Elias Pettersson's no move clause kicked in at midnight last night.
Yes. So congratulations to him. Also,
there you
Kevin
go. He control and Kevin Langton's.
No one was talking about that one.
And Philip Pronick. A trio of no move clauses kick in, and there wasn't really that much suspense because we'd heard for a while which way the wind was blowing on Elias Pettersson, but it is now official that if there was ever to be a further rupture in the relationship, he controls the process.
Sure, but also, the club never viewed this as the deadline that fans, I think, and media talked about it a lot more than I think the Canucks did internally.
Sure.
We've seen this team move guys with NMCs. Happened with JT Miller this past season, happened with Carson Soucy just this past season. NMCs are hardly the, like, absolute millstone. Now you can't get a deal done. Now we can put trade rumors aside. Line in the sand that I think this market's conditioned to viewing them as, in part because after the success of the Gillis era, when Benning and company took over, I think there was a lot of like, oh man, we can't move around these no trade clauses to explain away what was frankly managerial incompetence. And so I think this market's had a skewed perception as a result of years of gaslighting about what these clauses actually do. All they really do is make a deal a three-dimensional deal, and when you make it clear to a player that you're no longer invested in them, it's amazing how quickly they become open to getting traded to a low-tax, low-state tax jurisdiction.
Yep.
Anyway.
All right.
I don't think the Canucks ever viewed it as a deadline. It's really more than anything the point.
Yeah, and I think it's not... I don't think anyone should be looking at it as he's locked in for the next 7 years now. And it's like exactly what you're saying, but it's that he controls the process.
Yes.
Right. So the dump to Buffalo might become a lot more difficult if that's the way you wanted to go with it.
Well, and you never would have gone that way with it anyway. No, you don't treat guys like that.
That would have been tough.
Yeah.
That would have been very, very tough. The June 30th trade to Buffalo before your no move clause kicks in. That, that would have been an interesting look. Anyway, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. I'm seeing reports, by the way, from Bob McKenzie that it sounds like Nikolai Ehlers, who I think it's safe to say the highest profile UFA left on the board, not expected to sign with a team today. There'll be a ton of suitors for Ehlers. So no rush for the elite winger to make a decision. That's per reports I'm seeing on Twitter. So we're already kind of wondering what the big names to move will be today. And it sounds like Nick Ehlers, we won't hear his new team, or if he chooses to remain in Winnipeg today. We'll keep an eye on that one. All right, let's get to the two bits of business that the Canucks have taken care of already today as we wait for the rush of signings to trickle in here, and maybe already some evidence of what you were suggesting, that teams are being a little bit more cautious to avoid the tampering investigation from the NHL. But the Canucks didn't have to wait on these. And by the way, another potential Canucks target off the board, Christian Dvorak, per my producer Ben Bazarin, signing with the Philadelphia Flyers. Don't see a report on that quite yet, so I'm trusting
Elliot
Ben
Freeman,
here. Elliot Freeman, there we go.
One by four and a half mil.
So a $4.5 million contract.
Yeah, so,
so it would have hit the over-under, I said, if they had signed it.
Yes. So Dvorak had played his best hockey
5.4 for... million, just correct.
5.4?
5.4.
Woo! Get used to it, right? On Sunday, I was reporting, right, about Jack Roslovic too, there being some sense that if that was that was an option that the Canucks might end up being priced out on, right? These valuations that we're about to see are going to be through the roof. 5.4 million for a third line center. Now, Dvorak played for Tocket in Arizona and played his best hockey for Tocket. Over the years, I've kept bringing him up for the Canucks,
right?
Because of that, I knew that there was like a high regard. The, you know, another guy to look out for who's like a Tocket guy, quote unquote, would be like Christian Fisher. I always expected at some point the Canucks would go get Christian Fisher.
Yeah,
just because there's a very close relationship there. So not a huge shock that Christian Dvorak ends up with Rick Tocket in Philadelphia. The number is big. And yeah, I mean, if the Canucks did a $5.5 million center, then you're talking about $1.5 million left with which to do something else. I don't even know what $1.5 million is going to buy you in this market.
And it is a fascinating also the 1 year aspect of it. And if you look at it from Christian Dvorak's perspective, he's 29, gets a $5.4 million to play hockey this season, which is a fantastic number for him. Goes to a coach that he's familiar with and has played his best hockey under, and also a team that desperately needs centers on the depth chart. And you start to look at it, and it's almost like even Christian Dvorak has kind of the opportunity and the means to not just go, okay, I need to sign the biggest term possible, I need the maximum security, but he can kind of play a few steps down the road, right, a few moves ahead in terms of chess here, and say, you know what, I could actually set my, the cap's going to keep going up. I'm only going to be 30 next year. If I go and get back to, you know, my 18 goal high that I was at under Rick Tocchet in Arizona, I could be looking at this deal over multiple years next year. And I think that's very telling, as much as the number itself, the fact that even guys this far down the pecking order are kind of able to have this next step thinking, you know what I mean? Where it's like, I'm going to set myself up for an even bigger payday. Like, that's very telling to me.
For sure. Although I do wonder too, if Philadelphia, like in Philadelphia's case, right, they have so much money expiring after this season, just sort of naturally with how they're positioned, right? They've got all this dead money for Kevin Hayes and Scott Laughton that'll come off the books, a buyout for Atkinson, both their goalie contracts. You've got Zegras, you've got Drysdale. Like, this is a team that's looking at maybe having 35 to 40 million in cap space a year from now. And, you know, you've got Konechny, you've got Michkov. If Zegras helps them out, great. You've got Owen Tippett. You're in a major market. You're a historic NHL team. I mean, Philadelphia is positioning themselves too pretty consciously to be a big player in free agency 12 months from now.
Yeah, no, it makes sense for team and player.
Yeah, 100%.
There's a fit on the term for both team, for both sides, for sure, which is, but man, that $5.4 million for Christian Dvorak, I mean, is fascinating.
I mean, I wrote about it the other day, but once someone said to me, you know, 4.5 to 5+ for Pew Suter over the weekend, And I'm talking like a top decision-making NHL executive said that to me, not idle speculation or a fan on Twitter or what have you, right? Like, someone who would know sort of what the market's going to look like. Once that number sort of hit my radar, I just immediately was like, oh my God, Jack Roslovic signing for 5x5.
Yep.
And those are the types of deals that, as I reported over the weekend, I'm not saying that the Canucks won't ultimately like feel the pressure and change their mind, because things can change really quickly in this business. But I think as they consider their options, I think the Canucks are going to certainly try to avoid doing something a little bit reckless, doing a deal just to do it.
And we'll see if they're able to stick to that. And by the way, shout out to Daniel Briere and Keith Jones in the Philly front office for just saying, you know what, we're going to announce some deals. Nobody else is, but we don't care. Here's Noah Juulsen and Christian Dvorak. As somebody else texts in as well, Bo from Burnaby. Philly just bought themselves a second round pick at the deadline. That's certainly an angle to this as well, potentially.
I don't think Philly's going to be selling.
Well, you never know, though.
I just don't think they're going to
have the option at the very least, right? It's the kind of thing where it's baked in, or it's like, oh, hey, it didn't really work out, but maybe we can get some value back at the deadline.
I'm just saying, don't like, they were last in the Eastern Conference, but the gap between them and Columbus or, you know, New Jersey or the Rangers or whomever you want is not that significant.
We'll see what they can do in goal as well, because that's truly, truly atrocious goaltending last
year. Yeah,
there's not a lot to do out there, but we'll see what they can do, whether it's a trade maybe that manifests a little bit later down the line. Anyway. And by the way, just on the Christian Dvorak, we'd heard this before, but Rick Dhaliwal does tweet out, Canucks were very interested in Christian Dvorak, but they're obviously lose out to Philly for his services. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. So, Connor Garland, six-year, $6 million contract extension. We knew the number on this one. It's official now. He was on with Halford and Brough earlier today talking about, you know, Patrick Alvin calling him a core member of the team, really taking on a leadership role, why he wanted to re-up and remain here for 6 years after this deal expires. The other one that we heard was probably going to be made official today, but we didn't really have a sense of what the numbers were, right? Even what the term would be or anything like that. It's Thatcher Demko. And he signs a three-year contract extension. So he's got 1 year left on his deal. It'll kick in next year with an $8.5 million AAV. So I think back to Jim Rutherford talking at the end of the year about, okay, we have to find a way to share the risk here. And apparently the way they felt comfortable sharing the risk was to go shorter term, only a three-year extension, but probably a much higher AAV than a lot of people expected, considering how that ranks in the hierarchy of NHL goalies right now and the questions around Demko's health and durability. And it really feels like they kind of either had to choose to give him the term of a clear-cut number one workhorse goalie or the AAV of a clear-cut number one workhorse goalie. At least that's how it got, what it got to a point in negotiations, it seems like. And they chose to go, okay, we're going to go short-term. We'll give you the money. But if this bet goes south, we want to at least be able to see the light at the end of the tunnel pretty quickly.
Yeah, look, Thatcher Demko, obviously you hope that he's put the injury issues that he struggled with across this past season behind him. But I think the truth is that the availability questions precede the tear, precede the popliteus.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, like Demko's games played dating back to 2021-22, 64-32, 51-23. At the tail end of that 21-22 season, which was the Bruce There It Is season, Demko, like the last five or six games of the year, Demko was injured going into the playoffs. You then get the 2022-23 season where Demko obviously gets hurt early in the year, right? That's the year that Bruce Boudreau gets fired and replaced by Tocchet. Boudreau later saying that he never thought Demko really recovered from the previous season, right? And then you get the dominant season that he had as a Vezina nominee in 2023-24, where obviously he sustains that injury, works to come back, gets injured again in game one of the playoffs, and then last year. And so you sort of put together this track record of, like, we've had 4 years now where Thatcher Demko's been a starter in the NHL. He's 29 years old. He's going to turn 30. At no point has he put in one of those seasons where he's been really good, started 55 or more, and been healthy at the end of the year. Like he hasn't had a single season that in which he hit all three benchmarks. Now, an $8.5 million valuation pays him the exact same amount as Connor Hellebuck, who's literally 60 games like clockwork, but they should actually scale it back. Only Bobrovsky, Vasilevsky, and Shesterkin have a higher cap hit than he'll have. And there's something that those guys have in common. There's sort of set it and forget it goaltending options, right? We're going to get 55 to 60 games a year and we never have to worry about it. There's an availability aspect that Demko hasn't brought and that the club's going to effectively bet, like, in order to justify an $8.5 million valuation, one of the top valuations in the league for a goaltender, he's got to be playing and available at a far higher rate than he has been to this point. So I get nervous when you bet on something that's like a ceiling case, right? Like, this is workhorse starter. This is a workhorse starter AAV for a guy who's hasn't been a workhorse starter even before the Poplatius tear, which most reporting says he'll have to learn to play through. And so what happens when a goaltender is not available? Well, their minutes get replaced by someone who's usually inferior. And so as a result, like in the 4 years that Thatcher Demko's been the Canucks starter, Vancouver's rank by team save percentage has been 7th, 31st, 7th, and 25th. And so I understand that on paper, right, and because we've all seen Thatcher Demko string together these moments of incredible dominance, people think like, oh, well, the Canucks have locked up a top five goaltending tandem. And it's like, okay, but they actually haven't had top five goaltending a single time in Demko's tenure as this team's nominal starter. And now you have a $4.5 million backup too, so you're going to be spending 10% of the cap on this. That's the equivalent of like $10.5 million in the flat cap era. I think you can live with that, but you are effectively placing a bet on Demko to hit a level that he hasn't been at. It's not enough for him to be dominant for 40 games if he's going to live up to this valuation, and for that reason it strikes me as a pretty high risk bet. With that said, we obviously know the ceiling case that Demko has, the fact that he can take over months worth of games at a time. The club views him as the sort of player who can steal more than just games by himself, but maybe a playoff series down the line. That obviously loomed large in the organization's thinking here. Makes sense to have managed the term, but I still think when you factor in sort of what the Canucks are betting on relative to what the market usually buys, this is effectively like a bet on a ceiling that to this point we haven't seen Demko hit or maintain.
And I think back to when they signed the Kevin Lankinen extension, and my first reaction was that if Thatcher Demko was going to be signing an extension, it would not have a number this high, right? Because you're paying Kevin Lankinen kind of 1B money, which means it doesn't really make sense to go out and commit clear-cut number one workhorse starter money to your other goalie, whether it's Thatcher Demko or somebody else. The term, obviously, I think changed things from their perspective, right? They were willing to stomach it because they got the shorter term on Thatcher Demko, right? That whole idea of sharing the risk in the contract. And as you laid out, you know, the team save percentages there for the Canucks in Thatcher Demko's tenure as the starter, the clear-cut starter, it's volatility, right? 7-31, 25-7, like massive swings season to season. And it feels like this is an effort, the Lankinen-Demko tandem is an effort to mitigate that volatility, right? The idea that, hey, this is going to allow us to scale back Demko's workload, which hopefully keeps him healthier for longer. We're giving those minutes that we're replacing or that we're taking away from Thatcher Demko to a goalie we have a lot of confidence in. So hopefully, top five, look, that's aggressive, but it feels like an attempt to solidify your goaltending floor at a much higher level than it previously has been, while also trying to capture the ceiling. There's risks involved with that. You're paying a lot for your goaltending tandem. There's still massive questions. But I also think back to the point you were making about the Evander Kane deal, where it feels a little bit like an effort to engineer a scary playoff team, even if they're not going to be a great regular season team. And right. I think that's part of this, where it's like, okay, we have the infrastructure to reduce Thatcher Demko's workload, and then if we have a healthy Thatcher Demko in April, well, that's a very scary prospect. I'm kind of making the devil's advocate argument here a little bit. Like, I'm not saying I'm pounding the table in agreement with this, but I think to try to explain what I see as the thought process and the logic, like, that's what makes sense to me.
I mean, if you're trying to design a world in which Thatcher Demko is a unique playoff weapon for you,
yeah,
then having a $4.5 million
that's kind of how it makes sense
1B goaltender is the right way,
yeah,
to sharpen that particular blade, right? I like that angle, generally speaking. And so, yeah, I mean, look, the expectation, I think, is as you move into having a $13 million goaltending tandem beyond this season, you know, has to be that this team is in the top 10 in save percentage year after year after year during the life of that time frame, right? Because that's the investment you're making. And that, you know, there's at least a couple years where it carries you, right? Where, yep, it carries you and gives you a real edge come the playoffs. I am dubious about this bet for a variety of reasons. One of them is that I think it's a shooter's league right now. I just don't see a lot of goalies stealing games or series, frankly, when I watch the league right now. I see a lot of high-scoring games, right? I mean, people can talk about Bobrovsky being an edge for the Panthers in the Stanley Cup final, and that certainly was true. But that might say a little more about Stuart Skinner.
Yep.
And the Panthers scored 4 goals a game in the playoffs.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Like, come on. So I worry a little bit about that bet overall. You just hope to see more than anything that Demko gets a shot to make this contract a value on the merit of his performance, as opposed to it being about his availability or injuries or what have you, right? Like, more than anything, that's what I hope for, is that Demko's healthy enough and available enough that his performance will dictate the success or not of the success.
Two notes before we go to break. First of all, Dan Murphy, our colleague at Sportsnet, tweets out a rare tweet from Dan Murphy, says, "I'm not saying it's a good chance the Canucks sign Besser, but it's not no chance," which is where I thought things were earlier this morning. So a Besser update from Dan Murphy. And I know you're excited about this. I'm going to, we know the winner of free agency.
Matai Blumel.
Matai Blumel to Boston. Boston.
I immediately got multiple reach outs from Boston area podcasts or shows being like, "Hey, we're trying to research Matai Blumel, and you seem to be talking about it a lot. Can you appear on
Can you please tell us something about Matai Blumel?"
Like, "Sorry, guys, I'm on air till 3 p.m. If you want the hot Matai Blumel takes, you better tune in to
Sportsnet 650, baby." Cam Robinson reported it, and I clicked on the tweet to see the replies, and they're all just like immediately tagging you.
Strand.
My guy. Matai Blumel. There you go. The Boston Bruins win free agency.
My other guy, Justin Danforth, has had the like Aaron Ports line doing a breathless play-by-play of the will he or won't he with the Columbus Blue Jackets. And I've been following my dear colleague Aaron Portsline's Twitter feed and being like, "This content's just for me."
Wow. Rick Dhaliwal, just 18 seconds ago, hearing Besser and Vancouver will get done.
Wow.
So at the absolute death, when the door seemed closed, not official yet, but Rick Dhaliwal, our pal from Czech TV, Canucks Insider, reporting just seconds ago, hearing Besser and Vancouver will get done. We will go to break here in a minute, but just really quick, we'll wait to see if we get some details. And obviously, a lot of our next segment's going to be on this, but quick first impression.
When a player really wants to stay,
yep,
right, you've always got a shot. Besser always preferred to stay in Vancouver. I'm surprised that this has gone so full circle. It really did feel dead.
An incredible drama when you think about it.
For sure. I think the club itself will have been surprised by this outcome. And I'd add this, you are way better off, regardless of what this cap number looks, you are way better off keeping Brock Besser, And even if it's an overpayment, then you are having lost him for nothing today.
All right. Rick Dhaliwal reporting Brock Besser will remain in Vancouver longer term is all we're hearing so far. We're going to take a break, but don't go anywhere. Lots more on what this means, the ramifications, everything about Brock Besser sticking with Vancouver and everything happening in free agency around the league. It's coming up next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.
Sportsnet 650, breaking news.
All right, welcome back to Canucks Talk here. Yeah, we do have some breaking news. We mentioned it on the other side. We took an abbreviated break here because Brock Besser remains a Vancouver Canuck. Free agency had opened. It looked like the door was closed. Instead, he signs a 7-year deal with a 7.25 AAV to remain a Vancouver Canuck. Credit to Dan Murphy for having the figures on that first, our colleague at Sportsnet. And, man, this is a very big surprise, to be perfectly honest, considering everything that's transpired with Brock Besser over the last calendar year. I mean, people will point to the trade deadline and the commentary at the trade deadline and the reports of maybe a bit of a fractured relationship. But I even think back to last summer and Patrick Alvin saying, you know, "Hey, why didn't he score 50? We think there's another level there." It never really seemed to be a relationship that was sunny necessarily, which is fine, right? You're allowed to have contentious relationships in the NHL, but it always seemed like an exit was kind of in the cards, especially post trade deadline. Instead, they find a way to get the deal done. And my reaction to seeing that number it honestly, it feels like a flat cap salary, a flat cap era salary for Brock Besser, right? Like, that's what I would expect him to sign for, given his production and given the free agency class, even if we didn't have years of guaranteed cap growth baked in. And I'm not saying there's not risk. There is. Of course there is.
There's risk on any 7-year deal.
But to me, this speaks Brock Besser taking a 7-year deal at that number, which is not even that significant a raise. What, it's like a $600,000 raise on what he was making previous in an area where the salary cap is about to massively spike?
Yep.
That speaks to an incredibly strong desire to remain a Canuck and to remain in Vancouver.
Yeah, and, you know, there was the well-reported offer prior to the deadline that was 5x8 million, mm-hmm. right? So Besser does $10 million better than that with this contract by going to the death, by mm-hmm. sort of really engaging in a months-long staring contest that I think had the Canucks pretty convinced that he was more likely to depart than not, far more likely to depart than not. You know, not that the door has ever been closed, but even when I'd heard that, it felt half-hearted
right.
to me, reading between the lines. You know, I do think, like, as yesterday unfolded, I thought Pugh Suter was a far more likely outcome, and still I thought it was a remote shot versus Brock Besser, but they have kept Besser now, and I think this is a far better outcome than having lost Besser for nothing today.
You were not, there was zero chance you were going to get a more efficient use of $7.25 million today. Zero chance.
Agreed.
All right. So in many ways, this was the best case scenario for the Vancouver Canucks today, is finding a way to get Brock Besser to remain at this number. Like Christian Dvorak, 1-year deal. So I get that. And he's a center and all that, but he signed for 5.4. And you have Brock Besser coming in at 7.25 next year. So the fact that they were able to, that they did keep the door open just to crack, and they were able to finally get it done after free agency had opened, there's a world where this could have been a desperation overpay, right? Like, oh man, we weren't able to do the business that we wanted to do in the trade market. We're seeing what's out there in free agency. We're not going to be able to get a meeting with Nick Ehlers. Man, what do we do? We just got to give whatever we can to Brock Besser to keep him.
Well, sorry. I get what you're saying, but you're also reacting to the fact that the AAV is manageable.
Yeah, it's the term.
But they bent heavily
on the term. They bent
heavily
on the term, right? Because we always heard they didn't want to go beyond five.
Right. So, yeah. I mean, at least in terms of this organization's posture in contract talks right until the death, what changed that facilitated this? The club gave heavily on term, which allowed Brock Besser to make the decision that in his heart of hearts he always wanted to make, which was to remain in Vancouver, where he's put down roots. He'll probably retire a Vancouver Canuck. He's going to be very high ranking in franchise leaderboards. This is now a player who's got a real shot to be a player of like historic significance for this franchise, just in terms of what he's going to be able to accumulate given his skill set. He's also really good.
Brock Besser is 12th all-time in career points for the Vancouver Canucks already. And now he's signed for another seven years.
And where can he realistically get to, assuming a 50-point pace across,
let's say he adds another 350 onto that?
Or
we're looking at, if he adds another 300, he would just edge Trevor Linden for fourth.
Right.
If he adds, so he's 300 talking, points behind Trevor Linden.
We're talking about a baseline credible assault on Trevor Linden's spot in the Canucks all-time franchise record books. Like that's now in play for Brock Besser. And that's assuming that he's, you know, that he ages like normally.
Yep.
And I think at least that there's a shot that he ages a little bit differently than that for a variety of reasons. Among them, the fact that Besser's evolution in this league has given him what I would call like a greater toolkit of old man skills, right? And by that I mean the work at the net front, his work as a screener, the fact that, you know, most of Besser's goals these days aren't overpowering a goaltender with a glove high wrist shot, but are cleaning up the garbage in the crease in the blue paint.
Tips, deflections, right? Yeah, he's become an ace at those.
He's become like a little bit of a Joe Pavelski style attacker, to be totally honest with you.
Yep.
Which is an incredible evolution given where he was when, you know, he used to be called the flow and was just dining out from that left circle on the power play. Look, they needed a forward without question. There's no way, like Brock Besser was the top goal scoring forward available for anybody in free agency.
Mm-hmm.
And now the Canucks have brought him in. It's 7.25. So we have a sense, I think, or should have a sense, that the Canucks probably need to clear out some money.
Yes. They, per Puckpedia right now, and I know there's always things you can do to fudge it, but they are over the cap right. per Puckpedia. And we knew they were, if they were going to sign this type of deal, they will have to do something to clear out money.
Even if they'd signed like a $5 million deal. So I'm still looking at Bluger. I'm still looking at Joshua, some of those situations that we'd been reporting a couple weeks ago. But yeah, I think the fundamental takeaway here, right, is that on a day in which almost everyone is going to be significantly overpaid, the Canucks land Besser on a contract that, while they bent on term, I don't think you would say that's representative of this new wild market where everyone's getting overpaid by $2 million relative to our previous expectations.
There's no sticker shock, frankly, for me on this. Like, zero sticker shock.
And they've avoided that, you know, really painful, where we keep bleeding value in free agency aspect of this, which they risked by not doing the deal at the deadline.
Yep.
Right. And so they got right up to the edge, played chicken with it, but ultimately maintaining Besser as a valuable piece for this club is just so much better as an outcome than losing him. The fact that you can actually stomach the deal, that's just gravy.
Yeah. Somebody texted in, like, how does this make the reluctance or refusal to move him at the deadline look now? And certainly it obviously makes it look way better. It would have been tremendously painful to lose him, especially, I mean, everything we were hearing leading into the opening of free agency today was how hot the market was going to be for Besser, right? Winnipeg, interested, tons of cap space. Edmonton, interested, would have to move things around. LA, San Jose, desperate to make a deal. Boston, right? There was going to be an extremely heated market for Brock Besser, and I think that would have made the lack of return at the deadline even more difficult, right? Because, well, how could you not get something for this guy that half the league was in on when July 1st opened? So to keep him in-house and to keep him at a number that makes sense, even if you had to bend on the term, is a huge success for the Vancouver Canucks. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And we can turn our attention a little bit now, and we'll wait to see when this is made official by the Canucks. We'll do our very best to get Brock on the station as soon as possible. I'm sure he'll be speaking to the media today as well, because it's going to be very interesting to hear from his perspective how this came together and what went into the decision to remain a Vancouver Canuck. We can pivot a little bit to the perspective of what's next for the Canucks, because as you said, money is going to have to go out. Now, you've name-checked Teddy Bluger and Dakota Joshua as potential names that they would explore moving in this situation. Bluger is interesting because they still haven't added a center, right? We're still talking Pettersson, Hedl, and then Ratu, Bluger, Sasson, Niels Amon as your like center depth chart at the moment. So as much as, it's Teddy Bluger, he's a bottom six guy, that's opening up an even more significant hole in your center depth chart. So should all eyes be on Joshua? Are there other mechanisms?
I think it's not that all eyes should be on Joshua. It's that, like, ultimately Bluger's still an expiring deal who a lot of teams would view the same way that you do. Well, we don't have great center depth. He's certainly an upgrade for us in the fourth line. He can play some third line.
Yep.
So that's a much more straightforward deal to execute.
Yep.
If you really need to, than Dakota Joshua, who has, 3 years remaining and struggled last season.
Yes.
Now, I still think Joshua would have a lot of teams that would be very comfortable betting big on him, given the upside there and some of the uniqueness of his profile. But yeah, I mean, I think that more than anything, it's the realistic, the simplicity of a potential Bluger maneuver that I think needs to keep him at sort of very much not like as in the sidecar of sort of options to shed salary for the Canucks, but front of mind if the club, in fact, manages to do so over the course of today to get back in the market.
Now, in this, does this, I don't want to say lock us in, because it's Jim Rutherford, it's Patrick Alvin. We know they're active. We know they're always willing to be bold and to make moves. But we're already talking about, okay, they bring back Brock Besser. Now we're going to be waiting to see what the other shoe is to drop and who goes out to clear some salary space. That's before we even get in to what other additions are possible. So are we, again, I don't want to say locked in necessarily, but are inching closer to being locked into the Pettersson, Hedl, Ratu plus center depth chart here? Is that what we should be kind of preparing ourselves for, given the salary cap space that they just committed to Brock Besser on the wing?
sorry. So in terms of
like, is the center addition coming? Is basically what I'm saying. Even the like, hey, third line guy, maybe he can be more. Like, it's hard to see with Christian Dvorak getting 5.4, the space being opened up for it.
I think so. I think they will try to move some money off the wings. My expectation, this isn't re-reporting anything, but you know, having been briefed on some of their offseason thinking over the course of the past few months, I would expect that they'll try to move some money off the wings, having committed, you know, now 12 plus million to Kane and Besser as their signature moves this summer. I would expect them to try and reallocate some of that into the center ice position and get back into the market for at least like a Radek Faksa or a Nick Bjugstad type depth piece.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my expectation. I mean, they've got to do it. You've got to have another NHL option, I think. Even if plan A is Filip Hedl's our second line center and we're going to see what we have in Atu Ratu in the top nine, you know, and we've got Teddy Bluger on the, like, even if that's your plan, we sort of know that there are significant availability risks with Filip Hedl, and there's obviously the significant risks that maybe it doesn't work out with Atu Ratu, a player who, you know, I thought looked really good down the stretch last year, but also has just never done it.
No, you're placing a bet there. There's upside, but there's a lot of uncertainty and risk.
So, yeah, do you bring in some sort of credible veteran body? You know, and maybe it's one of those centers that can also play the wing. Maybe it's just a center capable forward for the middle six, but I feel like that's a high leverage thing that the Canucks should add just from a team construction standpoint here.
All right, text coming in here, 650-650. A lot of people really excited that Brock Besser is going to remain a Vancouver Canuck, and understandable. I mean, one of the longest tenured Canucks, drafted all the way back in 2015. We told you already where he's starting to rank in terms of point production, games played, all time for this franchise, and he'll have a chance now to continue to climb those ranks. But, you know, some questioning texts coming in as well, and this one from Roger and Kitts. I think gets to an interesting point. He texts in, are we just going to forget that it was only 2 months ago that we were all, he says, screaming, blow up this team. It's the same team. That's from Roger and Kitts. I think that's a fair point to bring up.
It's a very fair point.
We were talking.
Not only is it the same team, but the Garland and Demko extensions.
It's locked in longer term as the same team.
It's locked in and harder to dismantle if this organization decides that that's what they want to do. Now, we know, too, though, that this has been like, I get what you're saying. You crave something different.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of us do.
Well, okay. I want to attack. I can attack it from a couple different points of view, because there's the emotional, like what I've said, like you want a new cast of characters,
sure.
But there's also the raw as well. And I mean, I'll be upfront. Like, this one caught me totally by surprise, especially after free agency had officially opened. Right, he was free to talk to other teams. Instead, he remains a Vancouver Canuck. Brock Besser, 7 year deal, 7.25. What was your in the moment reaction to seeing the report?
Quite surprised, because everything we've been hearing leading up to this was that, you know, there might have been a break in the relationship that would have made this impossible. But ultimately, I think it speaks to the professionalism of both sides in this negotiation, that they were able to come to the table and get a deal done that makes sense for both sides. Brock Besser gets the term, and you know what, north of $50 million, I believe, was the number that he was looking at. So those are the numbers that he gets, and the Canucks lock up a very important scoring piece as a team that is going to need to find a way to generate more offense next year. And, you know, aside from, you know, liking the dollar amount on the deal, because I think especially as the cap goes up, that'll look like an even more value deal as every season passes. I think, you know, you look at the way the market is shaping up and what's out there, and how hard it might have been to replace the offense that Brock Besser is going to provide for this team. It made a lot of sense for them to circle back. It made a lot of sense for them to do the right thing and get this deal done. And I think it as I said, it speaks volumes about both Besser and that the Canucks, you know, came back and made sure they got this deal done, because it was going to be hard to find goals in free agency, and they were going to have to pay a premium to do so if they hadn't gone down this route.
In terms of what it says about Besser, I mean, pretty clearly this is a guy who couldn't really wrap his head around leaving Vancouver. Is that clear to you from what we've seen today?
Well, I think so. I think he wanted a reason to stay.
Mm.
I don't know if it's fair to say that he couldn't wrap his mind around leaving Vancouver, because ultimately he went to market. So there was some part of him, I would imagine, without having spoken to him, that was prepared to look elsewhere and consider other options. But, you know, the Canucks finally, after, you know, the way the negotiations had gone, came and said, okay, this is the offer we're willing to go to. And clearly Besser was just waiting for the offer that he felt he needed to stay. So he wanted to stay, it's clear. And again, this is something the organization has prioritized. They talked about it with the Evander Kane trade, bringing back guys or bringing in guys that want to be in Vancouver at a time where Vancouver may not be the most desirable market to sign at from a free agent perspective. You know, I think that's important to them, and it's important, you know, for how they're going to build this team, that they have guys here that want to be here. So, you know, do I think that Besser, you know, absolutely was always going to come back? I don't think I would go that far, but he wanted to come back. He was waiting for the offer that he felt he needed, and he got it from the Canucks today.
Demko locked up long-term. Besser locked up long-term. I guess Demko 3 years. That's long-term for a goalie.
Yeah.
And Connor Garland locked up long-term here. Pettersson's NMC has kicked in. This does feel like, you know, not just a last stand for this core group, but the organization sort of doubling down on a team that I think it's fair to say is largely underachieved across the last 5 years. How do you feel about sort of the entropy factor in terms of the Canucks staying the course with this core group?
Yeah, well, I think the best way to describe it, I guess, is I don't know what else they could have done. Because of where they sit with Quinn Hughes and his contract status, because of their desire to remain competitive, because of their desire to win and get back to the playoffs, you know, with the way the market is shaped up, with the fact that they, you know, haven't as of yet, and I say that as an important caveat, been able to bring in the center addition that they would have hoped to this point, you know, I think it was almost their only option was to double down on this core group. Now, that doesn't mean that it won't succeed or that they won't have success with these players now that they've locked them up. But, you know, as I already spoke about with Besser, where were they going to get the goals in free agency if they weren't getting them from Brock Besser? Where were they going to find a starting goaltender who at his peak can be a Vezina winner or at least a Vezina nominee, if not Thatcher Demko? Connor Garland has been a good soldier and has played up and down the lineup and has given them very good minutes throughout his time in Vancouver, and I think there's even more to be unlocked there. So, you know, ultimately when these managers make decisions, and Trance, you'll know this, like anytime you're signing a player or you're making a decision, a player stays, a player goes, you're placing a bet. Either that, you know, the alternative will be better, or that bringing that guy back, you can unlock more from what you've seen from him, or that he can maintain his level going forward. And the Canucks are betting on this core group. Now, you know, some people might think that is not a strong bet, but I think in terms of short-term success, it was the only bet for them to place, because the alternative is moving on from Demko and maybe making a trade this offseason, and then, okay, you're betting on Kevin Lankinen to be a workhorse starter potentially, or you're bringing in another guy to be part of a tandem. If you're moving on from Besser, then you got to find a way to replace his goals in free agency, which is going to cost a premium. And you know, to be perfectly frank, I don't know if they would have been able to do it. So, you know, ultimately, we're all going to see how this plays out, and how these bets pay out or don't is going to determine the success of the franchise in the coming years. But with the situation they're in, with the market they're operating in, I think, you know, doubling down on this core group was almost their only option, and now it's up to those guys that they have placed those bets on, Elias Pettersson, Connor Garland, Thatcher Demko, Brock Besser, to come together and be the core group that this team needs to ultimately have some success here in the short term, and, you know, in the medium term now, with Garland locked up for 6 years and Besser for seven now too.
Yeah, and the Besser discussion was always an interesting one, right? Because the big need for this team was goal scoring, offensive firepower, and yeah, down the middle, but just generally up front. And so whenever we talked about Besser leaving, you know, we always got the rejoinder from our listeners like, well, hold on, if you're talking about goal scoring, like, why are you letting Brock Besser walk? And I think the idea of that was always going to be predicated on, can we find a more efficient use of whatever it would cost to retain him to punch up our forward group? And I think what we saw and what Canucks management saw was the answer to that is no. Like, they weren't going to find a more efficient way to use $7.25 million to increase their offensive firepower going into next season than retaining Brock Besser. And it probably, like, this was their best bet to add goal scoring punch to the lineup, was keeping their own guy.
No, absolutely it was. And this is what I'm getting at when I'm saying, like, I think it was almost their only option. Like, unless, you know, you were going to move on from Demko and move on from Pettersson and let Besser go to market, or, you know, hindsight being 2020, move him at the trade deadline for assets, which obviously didn't happen. You know, that would be charting a very new and different path. And ultimately, if you were going to do that, you had to be getting really good value on the open market for a guy like Demko, for a guy like Pettersson. Ultimately, that hasn't happened. And, you know, we're not in the boardroom with some of those conversations, so you don't really know what the value for those players might have been. The one thing we do know, Patrick Alvin told us at the deadline, is that they didn't feel the value was there for Besser on the trade market. And ultimately, the team that Brock Besser is most valuable to is the Vancouver Canucks. And he wants to be here. He's going to get a chance to continue to deliver. He's probably going to get a chance to continue to play with Pettersson, or get back to playing with Pettersson anyway after the time he spent on Miller's line over the last few years. And these are the guys now. You know, if you're listening right now, whether you like it or you don't, this organization is going to succeed or fail on the backs of, in particular, Elias Pettersson, Brock Besser, and Thatcher Demko. And, you know, if these guys can come together and play at their peak and get back to being the kind of players that we know they can be, for Demko in terms of health and availability, for Pettersson in terms of production and play driving, and for Besser in terms of, you know, mostly production is really what he's going to be judged on. You know, if those guys can play to their peak, then this team has a chance to do some damage. But, you know, those are the bets this management group has made, and now we get to sit back and watch and see how they pan out.
Now, of course, we're also sitting here, and the Canucks are currently over the salary cap per Puckpedia, and for all of the talk about improving their center situation, that has yet to materialize, and the options out there, certainly on the free agency market, are pretty slim. How concerned are you looking at their center depth chart? And we'll see, it's a long time before the season starts, and what do you see as kind of the most likely path forward for addressing and dealing and managing the center position?
Yeah, that's the only thing that, you know, I really take a second and think about with this Besser extension, is the opportunity cost of the cap space it takes up that now makes it that much more difficult to address the center ice position. And, you know, they're now essentially a dollar in, dollar out team. So, you know, they're going to have to move money if they want to address the center ice position, and that money is most likely to be moved on the wings now, because you brought in Evander Kane, you brought Brock Besser back, you like the way your blue line is constructed, and the pieces you would have considered moving on your blue line, you know, probably weren't a ton of cap space anyway, right? Like, when we looked at them trying to upgrade the center ice position through trade, we were looking at first round picks, we were looking at, you know, prospects like Lekkerimäki or Vilander. So, like, I heard you guys talking before you brought me on about the likelihood of someone like Dakota Joshua being traded. I think, you know, that becomes more likely now with this Besser extension. And, you know, I think it becomes more likely that, as much as we've talked about, you know, them placing bets and pushing their chips in on Pettersson and Besser, I think they're pushing their chips in on Filip Hedl to a certain extent as well, which seems like a risky bet with some of the injuries that he's faced in the past. That said, we're speaking at, what, 10, 11 in the morning on July 1st, so there's lots of time for things to happen, and we know, because of how difficult it's been for teams to add players on the trade market and the way that market is shaped up, that if they do want to move players out, especially players like Dakota Joshua, who has shown the kind of player he can be, and albeit coming off a down season with the cancer diagnosis and trying to battle back from that and get back into the lineup and having some injuries around it and all of it, there would still be suitors for a player like Dakota Joshua on the open market. So, you know, as much as it makes things a little bit more difficult for them to continue to add to this roster, I think in the current climate, if they do need to move off some money, they will be able to do it to ultimately address those needs. It's just, you know, much like we've been talking about for weeks and weeks and weeks, even before living in this reality that we're in right now where they've extended Besser. You know, where are they going to find that centerman that makes the most sense for them, and how are they going to get that done? I think that's still a pretty open question, and it'll be interesting to see if they can answer it, or if we're looking at, you know, a big bet being placed on Filip Hedl to be the second line center, and a lot expected of Teddy Bluger to be the third line center, and then someone like Atu Ratu maybe getting a chance to be a full-time NHLer in a fourth line role to begin the season.
Batch, really appreciate the time. Thanks for doing this, man.
Sounds good. Thanks, boys. Have a good one.
That is Brendan Batchelor, voice of the Canucks here on Sportsnet 650. Tap it in for us to react to the news that Brock Besser remains a Vancouver Canuck. And I really think the story and the way to frame this is not just about Brock Besser in isolation, but it is about taking all together the Besser deals with the Besser deal along with the Demko and Garland deals. And somebody texted in earlier, Kurt from Ladner, did the Demko deal getting done impact Besser's decision to sign? I wouldn't say it was that straightforward or anything, but it is notable. And, you know, the Canucks reposted this. Thatcher Demko on Instagram reacting to the Brock Besser announcement and saying, thank you, sweet baby Jesus. Thank you. And I don't think it's completely out of left field or inappropriate to view this as kind of a collective bit of decision making, right? Like these guys saying, hey, I like playing with you guys. Let's all stay here together.
It's
like, I'm not saying this was, you know, like LeBron and D-Wade and Bosch to Miami, like that level of coordination, but there's something there.
But there's a different South Florida situation involving three players that played out across the last 10 days that I think is a relatively straightforward analogy.
Yep.
Of course, the difference in accomplishments between those core groups is massive, mm-hmm. but that doesn't change the fact that, you know, Bennett deciding to stay and then Marchand in the pool in the Bahamas hanging out with the boys, and Aaron Ekblad would sort of be the Besser analog, where it's like, no matter how little you offer me, I'm probably gonna stay. No,
I just really don't want to leave.
Yeah, I mean Besser,
no, it's not a bad analogy. They're like drafted, been through it, like totally. Seen the downtimes, and there's been a lot here in Vancouver, right? But it's like, yeah, I just don't want to go.
I just can't wrap my head around being elsewhere. Now, I think the Canucks met Besser more than halfway on term, right? And that probably was decisive in a way that I don't know that the Panthers really bent for Ekblad at all.
They bent for Marchand on term, though.
They bent for Marchand on term, for sure. But not on Ek. So anyway, point being that, yeah, for sure, there's its own momentum when your teammates want to stick around.
Yes.
Without question. And again, I think keeping Besser and not bleeding that value in unrestricted free agency, I think is just so much better than having gone through that deadline, failed to monetize this guy who's only a year removed from being a 40-goal scorer, right? Who always seems to be scoring huge clutch goals in the playoffs. Yep. Or the
St. Louis goal.
Yeah, I was about to say St. Louis goal.
So
that was unbelievable.
Like, yeah.
It was such a rock star shot.
Yeah.
And so that's a way better outcome for the team than having not sort of done that. But, you know, this is now the same group with Evander Kane and no Rick Tocchet.
Yep.
Effectively.
Well, and probably no Pugh Suter.
Right.
That I don't know if that ship has sailed, but it would certainly be money out.
Well, yeah. I mean, maybe they have to make a deal. The fact that, look, the longer Suter doesn't sign, the more interesting that possibility is, potentially.
That's fair. Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, keeping the band back together, is that really enough? Is that enough to contend with whatever Edmonton looks like once they're finished their renovation, or Vegas with Mitch Marner?
I also wonder, though, but
Utah with Paterka.
It's very fascinating how this offseason has played out so far, because one of the things we've been talking about is the sense of urgency. The idea that you had to take this major step forward this season because of the Quinn Hughes factor. And instead, what we've seen, and you know, that might require some really massive bets, shipping guys out, certainly selling your first round pick, maybe selling some prospects as well, young players being willing to take those sorts of swings because of that sense of urgency. Not because you thought you were close, not because you thought you were knocking on the door of being at the level of those teams, but just because that was your only hope. Instead, what we've seen play out is, okay, they traded a fourth round pick for Evander Kane, but they've kept all their prospects and they kept their first, second, and third round picks and made those selections at the draft. And now they've, instead of, you know, okay, can we trade Connor Garland for a bounty and then turn around and flip those assets? Can we trade Thatcher Demko for a first-round pick and use that to go target a player and take on some risk in net? Instead of these kind of short-term moves, they've locked up guys that they believe in, and I'll get to the kind of culture side of things in a second, because that's something that was name-checked by Patrick or referenced by Patrick Alvin in all of the statements on these players. To me, you can almost, like, is there less urgency? Or have they just had to pivot to a less urgent stance because the urgent one wasn't going to happen? But it feels like we're talking about a much less urgent set of decisions than we were a couple of months ago. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, do they still see it as we have to compete with Vegas and Edmonton this year? Or is it, hey, we've got these guys we like locked up. Let's see what materializes over the next year, but over the next 2 or 3 years to help us take those next steps.
Yeah. I mean,
that's a big bet on Quinn Hughes, but like, that's how I would read the moves we've seen so far.
Yeah, I think they're going to just keep building. I think some of the logic of what they saw across the month of June probably impacted things. The fact that Garland and Demko were receptive to extending, the fact that Marcus Pettersson and like that deal aged so well. I was going to joke about Connor Garland and the Besser signing actually sort of ruined my hypothesis, which was that Connor Garland might be the first guy to sign a contract that's out of date within an hour. I think there was a real risk of that. I think Besser going off the board relatively affordably to Vancouver, I think, sort of changes that.
Yep.
There's not really enough wingers.
Well, and I think I saw Quadrelli pointing out from Canucks Army on Twitter that if you do the percentage of the cap thing, it's very similar to the Garland deal, actually.
Right.
Where it's like, it's kind of the same deal. It's kind of just locking into the same deal percentage of the cap wise. Now, obviously, you've got the term risk for both players, and that's always present. But in the near and medium term, it's like, yeah, it's a raise technically, but it's, this is your role. You were meeting the brief, right? You were fulfilling your role at a reasonable number. And so let's just keep it going. And that's what they did with both of those guys.
Yep. Yeah. And so now I think the question just is stasis enough?
Yep.
Is stasis enough to appeal to this marketplace, right? Can this group create a culture of consistent achievement? Not a culture where that achievement is, you know, based on individuals and sort of on paper and, oh, it's an elite core. They've just never won anything.
Yeah.
They just don't always make the playoffs. You know, like that's more than anything where I think we are going to need to see some growth. Like, it's good for this group to commit, but we need to see a lot less comfort, right? I think we need to see a little bit more, honestly, like openness in terms of community leadership, in terms of how this group carries itself. I think that's going to be vital here.
Yes.
And we need to see more winning. We need to see more consistent achievement from this core group. I think there's significant questions that we should reasonably have, just given the on-again, off-again success, failure, sort of rigmarole that we've been doing with this same Canucks core across the last 5-6 years. They're not young players anymore. These are third contracts. These are fourth contracts.
Fourth contract for Brock, right?
Yeah. For some of these guys. And so, you know, I think with that comes a different set of expectations in terms of what we, what fans should expect from this group. Like, it's great that they get along and want to stay together, but it's time to start winning. It's time to start being a regular playoff team, or else what are we doing here?
Yeah. And I made the point about Patrick Alvin and the press releases for accompanying all of these signings, and I'll just read out some of the key quotes.
So we got a text, though. Culture setters, what culture? This team is so frustrating.
So this is from Patrick Alvin. Brock is a leader and culture setter in our locker room. I hope that culture is going to be a lot better than it's been over the last few years. You know what I mean? And clearly they're believing that these players can do that, can be part of that solution, along with Quinn Hughes, along with Elias Pettersson. Connor Garland. Gars is an emerging leader in the group.
What's with the nicknames?
I don't know.
Get the nicknames out of the press releases.
I thought he was Garly. There's that too, right?
Why are nicknames in the press releases?
Gars is an emerging leader in the group and works extremely hard to keep himself and the players around him accountable. And Demmer is one of the hardest working players on our team and gives our group great confidence when he takes the net. So it's
did Chris Tanev write these? What's going on?
Imagine that.
I'm sorry, but we have no. Stop this. No more nicknames. I'm going to start doing more old man yells at cloud stuff.
Wow. All right.
Because this team, honestly, I like nicknames do not belong in an official press release announcing $30 to $50 million contracts. I'm sorry.
It's also an interesting look.
No ball caps at media day availabilities. Locker room cleanout day. No one should be in a ball cap covering their face. Everyone should have a collared shirt on. This is part of it, man. No more nicknames and press releases. Carry yourself like pros.
Wait, carry yourself like bro? Oh, pros. You said bros.
Oh, no, they're definitely like, carrying themselves like bros.
Like, what does that mean?
That drives me nuts.
George Steinbrenner in the house.
Man.
Shave those sideburns.
Are we going to get a Sutsy if they sign Suter?
Sutser? What was it? What is...
Suits.
I think it's Suits.
Okay.
You like
Sutsy?
That one?
I don't know. No nicknames.
They should do the...
Nicknames do not belong in formal copy. Come on.
They should do the next... You gotta go one step further. If you got to Suits, then you have to call him like Meghan Markle or something, right? Like, you gotta do the next
Marks.
Step. Marks. If you're gonna call a guy Suits.
Gonna
right.
Drive me nuts.
650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Again, the big news is
that Gars signed.
Gars.
I don't know if you heard, but Gars and Demmer got done.
Gars, Bess, and Demmer have all re-signed with the Vancouver Canucks. A roundup of some other moves around the NHL. We'll take a break in just a second. Sean Gentile will join us on the other side. Connor Brown signs a 4-year, $3 million deal with the New Jersey Devils. That's a departure from the Edmonton Oilers. As mentioned, Corey Perry and Yoel Armia both going to the LA Kings. Tanner Jeannot, 5-year deal, $3.4 million a year with the Boston Bruins. And I get it. I understand it. But that 20-goal season with Nashville is pretty far back in the rearview mirror now. He had 13 points last year in the NHL. He gets 5 years, $3.4 million from the Boston Bruins. Still monitoring the Nick Ehlers situation. Vlad Gavrikov is off the board. But really, I mean, it's who's next? Granlund? It's Ehlers and Granlund at this point, the highest profile UFAs left on the board. I think that's what we're talking about. And it sounds like Nick Ehlers, the decision might not come today. He really controls the process at this point. So we'll take a break here. 650, 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line.
Really quickly, people are saying can't dictate dress code in the new CBA. I have no problem with how players show up for a game.
Mm-hmm.
The way that the NHL dress code works, people don't realize this. You have to show up for the plane to the plane in your suit, and then everyone sits down, and then they change into their track suits. That is nonsense, and that should be done away with. And I like the idea of players showing up to games, like doing the arena walk-ins NBA style. I do think, though, that it's fair to expect some level of professional dress when players are showing up to interact with the community.
Sure.
That's it.
All right. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Sean Gentile from The Athletic joins us next for a chat about everything happening in NHL free agency here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650.